It looks like Mercedes are well and truly enjoying this new era in the Formula One. But while the sport is forced into a wartime break, ain't that a weird thing to hear in 2026, in this forced break, let's dial it back a few generations and have a proper look at all the sport's main eras that led us to 19-year-old Kimi Antonelli fearlessly charging onto the podium in China. There is so much about the sport that we don't know, and there is so much that we need to truly appreciate what we have on our TVs every Sunday. So buckle up as Ben, Sandile, and the returning Dimitri go full throttle on this for your sporting entertainment. It's episode 77 of the On The Bounce show. It's the Formula One era show. Let's get into it. All right, Formula One time. Now, I've said this a few times in shows we've done in the past, but I've always had a couple in my mind that I want to get to, and I just waited for the right moment. Seeing as Formula One's about to go in a wartime break, as the AI guy said, I think we should do the Formula One eras show. So, as always, on my left, Sandile.
Yeah.
Looking very sporty, innit? What jersey is that?
This is just a replica of like an Argentina jersey I got from like Cotton On, so it's nothing hectic.
Okay.
But I'm here for our...
Well, there's a couple of prominent Argentinians ahead in the show. Dimitri, you're not a prominent Argentinian, but you are still very much loved.
And a problem. Also, very excited. You asked me how I was on F1, and my answer was, yeah. I grew up in like the anti-F1 household, and I think my lack of context could make today quite fun.
What's
and
an
fun.
Anti-F1
That's
household?
Crazy. Are you like NASCAR based?
No, NASCAR. My Zimbabwean Greek father loved the Indianapolis 500.
So what? No. Dog racing? Like no, what are you Greeks into?
Cockfighting. Without chickens.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, no, my dad hated things that went fast. So he was a big road safety guy. So any motorsports is not
like,
him.
Yo.
Dimitri, don't watch this. Dimitri, look away. So yeah, I'm quite interested to talk about a sport that I've been shielded from for most of my life.
So I mean, I'm sure you guys always appreciate Dimitri on the show, mostly for Sports Greatest Photographs episodes. If you go back into the archives, we've done a few where we just got the best photographs from all time in sports, and just made, you know, hot takes and reactions around it. So today is basically an amalgamation of all that kind of stuff, but we're putting it into F1 because, guys, I have some stories and some visuals that are going to make you very happy for the week ahead.
I'm super excited about what you got.
So we've just had the Chinese Grand Prix. Kimi Antonelli, he won. Was really, really great. And like I said, because of the war in Iran, warring in the Middle East in general, we've lost Bahrain and Saudi Arabia. Amos, can you bring up that first slide there just so we can see what the revised schedule is going to be? So right now, the Japanese Grand Prix, if you're watching the show this week, is going to be March 29th. So that's what? Next weekend.
The weekend after.
Okay, next weekend. So we've got the Japanese Grand Prix coming in March 29th. Then we've got a whole break. There will be no April Grand Prix.
Sure.
No Grand Prix for all of April because Bahrain and Saudi Arabia fall away. And then it picks up again with the rest of the season kind of going to plan with the Miami Grand Prix in May the 3rd. Then we got the Canadian, and then we got the Monaco Grand Prix. And then it's a whole run of the Europeans. We go Monaco Grand Prix. The Spanish Grand Prix is going to be a new one. So that's the streets of Barcelona. Oh, damn
cool.
Exciting.
That's
exciting.
Eh? Cool.
Then we've got the Austrian, the British, the Belgian, the Hungarian, the Dutch, and the Italian. Amos, next slide there, please.
The guy who named the Hungarian track was just so over his job that day, dude. Hungaroring.
The Hungar Ring.
You just threw it in the...
Hungar Ring.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
sorry, I read it in Afrikaans. Hungaroring.
And then, yeah, September from there, Spanish GP, Madrid. Sorry, that's the street circuit. Sorry, I apologize. And then Azerbaijan in Baku, another street circuit. Singapore, what a place that is for a Grand Prix. That's October. And then we go to the rest, basically. The Americas. We've got America, Mexico, Brazil, Las Vegas. And then Qatar gets thrown in there on the 29th. And it all finishes up Abu Dhabi Grand Prix December 6th. Yes. So, yeah, there's going to be 22 races this season, guys, not 24.
Can I ask? I know it's a wild thing. So I'm assuming the point system now has changed. They've adjusted it completely.
No, it'll be exactly the same. We're just losing two races.
Okay.
That's all that happens.
I've always wondered why Abu Dhabi was like the last pinnacle, in the calendar. Like as your yeah, I mean
the ching ching.
It's like the race to Abu Dhabi.
I know the answer, but damn, it would be so much cooler if it was like a Monza.
You reckon?
Something a bit more stylish. I don't know. So maybe the way I feel about like Emirati sports after, you know, the massive football takeover is that I'm just a little bit like, well, it's glossy yeah, and not like...
Dimitri, this is why we have to do a Formula One era show.
Yeah.
To actually show
take
you...
Take me there,
to
Papa.
Show you within context why I think it's actually an okay thing that it finishes in Abu Dhabi.
Show me the way.
I'm here for this take. Why show me it's the okay. Way.
Guys, I mean, like, every now and again, we look at sport almost flippantly and go, oh, it's just sport. But yeah, when you realize the journey that sports have come onto, you get to appreciate where we are right now. And Formula One... okay, Amos, we're going to have a long show. If you are actually, if you only listen to us on the podcast, I recommend going onto the YouTube, that today is a very visual show. Yeah. Because straight away, we've got here, guys, this is where it all began. Yeah. Okay, so.
The first Uber.
Basically, 1925, guys, is where it all began. Okay. So when, Dimitri, you say it sucks that it's in Abu Dhabi to end with, it used to only just be Europe.
Okay.
So basically, it all started here. It was originally called the World Manufacturers Championship.
Okay.
And as you can see, it was just a whole bunch of jolly good blokes in these cars that look like they can't go in corners, but they do. Let's pop the next slide there, Amos. Maybe we'll see some of it more. There we
this
go.
This is so gangster.
I mean, the Oaks got like an old school Alfa Romeo shirt on.
And they're motherless, yeah.
Pair of chinos. I can't confirm if this is before or after a race.
Yeah, no, this one looks like breathalyzer test will fail before.
But yeah, guys, this is how
this
it started.
This is where
right?
bribing started.
Yes. Guys, this is where it started. Mid-1920s. Look at the Oak on the right with the goggles on.
And no teeth.
Yeah, no teeth.
Is that where steampunk came from?
That Oak there has only known the smell of petrol and hard labor.
Ew.
But that Alfa Romeo shirt is
it's
absolutely
such a great
swag.
Photo, I love, let's talk for a second about it being called the Manufacturers Championship, which I think is cool. Because
World Manufacturers Championship. So basically Maserati, Ferrari, Alfa Romeo, those kind of big
who
cats back in
the day.
Built
the best car.
Yeah, and that's what it is. Formula One essentially is still that today.
Yeah.
You know, there was times where they kind of lost their way a bit because I think most things got like confused in the 80s and 70s.
100%.
But it was, that was like, this is the precursor to Formula One. So basically from there, 1931, they looked around and said, like, geez, guys, everyone's just European here. Mm-hmm. So
this
it became the European.
Are you talking about in South Africa?
No.
I don't know why I'm laughing at that.
So in 1931, it became the
Cape Town.
European Drivers' Championship. Amos, we got a slide there for something a bit more contemporary. So as you can see, guys, it was mostly in Europe. The cars were just all there. Like, it's loose, you know, it's gentleman racing. And here, there's like all kinds of Oaks driving. So, like, they'll do a few laps, pull in, have a cigarette.
And go home.
Yeah, this looks super casual.
It's called the Bougie Champagne. By the way.
Bougie Champagne was a major sponsor back in the day.
Okay.
So, yeah, guys, this is where it started. But while this is happening... All the Oaks got together and was like, okay, guys, we need something bigger. We need something that's going to be really amazing. And they were like, cool. So European Drivers' Championship, 1939, they're like, guys, we need something bigger. And they're about to make Formula One, but then Nazis, obviously. 1939, Second World War.
Another war break, buddy.
Another war break. Yeah. So this was the big war break. Yeah, though. Yeah, so basically from 1939... to 1945, slightly bigger than the Iran thing. So what happened was is that after the Second World War, the guys got together again and they decided to call it the Formula One. So Formula, slight little English thing here, Formula One being formula as in like everyone has the same formula of rules.
Oh.
So they wanted something together that came together all the best drivers, and the formula for this was what they all decided upon. And that's where Formula One comes from. And that basically in 1946, they agreed upon it. Then they obviously just went to a very long lunch. And basically only 1950 that it really began.
So they did all of that and just chilled out.
No, they were working out the formula.
They worked out the formula and then they're sort of having affairs. You know, Europe was a very fluid time back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, they were kind of rebuilding after the Nazis.
They had to build a track.
So they actually physically build tracks that didn't have major craters in it. So yeah, guys, 1950 was when Formula One actually started.
Yeah.
First race was at Silverstone.
Oh, okay.
And check the visuals in this one, right? Those were the cars. Slightly better, massive front engine.
The formulas, it's the standardization, yes. Right? So that's what that means. Because I've always wondered, and like we weren't lying earlier when I said that I genuinely have limited knowledge, is that so the standardization is one thing that I've always tried to understand, that there's very little wiggle room for innovation and interpretation. If we innovate, we all innovate, and it's only up to the certain standard.
Because you're all the same rules.
And aerodynamics can only be this aerodynamic, and because all of those cars look exactly the same. It's like waiting for an Uber at the airport, which Corolla is mine.
Pretty much, yeah. You couldn't rock up there with a jetpack on your back or like a three-wheeler car.
And that's true still.
Yes.
But how do they move? Because obviously cars get faster and drivers get smaller. I don't know. But cars get faster, but there's always... Do they move how much horsepower? Does that ever change? Do they come together to have meetings about
it? Well, Dimitri, this is why we have to have a Formula One era show.
Hell yeah.
Because this is it. We'll go through all of this now.
Cool. Going back to that visual, sorry, Amos. I'm looking at like Kid Clash. Like, how do you...
I'm
like...
That's what I was
saying. Well, how do you define manufacturer?
It's black and white, okay? Now Amos, let's colorize. Let's colorize. Go to the next one.
Nice.
Okay, not this one.
That's a bale of hay.
No, Amos, we've got to keep going forward in time. We're not doing. There we go. Okay, so there we go.
Numbers.
As you can see, numbers.
Numbers.
And they were all mostly red. So this was what Silverstone looked like, right? You got the big Union Jack there. Of course, England was still English. Mm-hmm. And that was the start, hey? But yeah, hay bales, Silverstone. And then the original guy who won it, the first Oak. Next slide there, Amos. This guy, look how dandy he looked, huh? Wow. Giuseppe Farina won the first ever F1 race.
Mate, those look like bicycle tires.
They do look like bicycle tires. Very phallic looking cars.
Yeah. How do you turn there?
Willy cars.
Turning must have been slowly. So gangster at this time.
But yeah, guys, so 1950s where it started, right? In the first season, there were only 7 races. They did 7 races around Europe. And then they also threw in the Indianapolis 500.
I knew it.
Excuse me?
They did 7 races, Formula One, and then they went to Indianapolis 500. That was the 8th race.
In those cars?
In those cars.
And just win.
Yeah. How terrible it must have been.
No, listen, one day we're going to do a NASCAR show because I will give you all the money I have if you can convince me that it's a fun sport. But anyway, carry on.
Well, it's easy to follow. So, yeah, guys, in the beginning, as we know it now, there's like every team has 2 drivers and it's very like concentrated. Back in those days, there were like loads of drivers. Even during the race, Oak would be like, guys, I need to go to the toilet or I need to go talk to the lady in the stands over there. And they would pit and drivers would change. So it was quite fluid. And the original, like the maneer of those days was a guy called Juan Manuel Fangio.
Oh, he's a pretty good looking guy.
He won.
How you got that pronunciation?
Yeah, good looking. Okay, so he won 5 consecutive championships from 1951. Sorry, won 5 championships, 1951 to 1957. A record that was only broken later on by Michael Schumacher.
I was going to throw a name out.
So Juan Manuel Fangio, the soak was he was a machine. In that time period, he won with Alfa Romeo, Maserati, Mercedes, and Ferrari. Not
where's
loyal.
Where's the contract of the loyalty?
It's like the Premier League now. Yeah, there's just no such thing as one club men anymore, bro.
So I reckon after the race, Soak could get hammered with someone and be like, yeah, next week I drive for Alfa Romeo.
He's bitter, yeah. Or someone, he's the kind of guy who always telling you about how he's been wronged by somebody else.
Or you know what? He was just so good, everybody wanted to throw their cars at him.
Yeah.
So Stirling Moss was his big rival at the time. And what's that guy you just showed us now?
Ben.
You reckon look like me?
Sterling Moss. A bit of a Benny thing going on.
Sterling Moss, who aka looks like me back in the day if I was black and white. Sterling Moss was a big rival of Juan Manuel Fangio back in those days. And then there was another Oak, Alberto Ascari. Now this Oak also drove the Ferrari. He had 9 straight wins. Amos, next slide there. So that's Stirling Moss's car.
That's a pretty good looking
car. That's a whip right there.
Oh, cool. Stirling Moss's car, huh?
Because he's so famous.
So famous.
The other 2 names I don't know, but I've heard of Stirling Moss so much that he's like a...
So this is the thing about Stirling Moss, right? Because his name was Stirling Moss, obviously he was hugely good looking.
Yeah.
Dirk never won a title. So he won races.
He never won.
But he was the most famous guy.
His name sounds like a Bond villain and he had a good jawline and he was British. So now he's... The name I know. That's
great marketing,
wrong.
Guys. Have a good name in life.
That's wrong.
Sterling Moss.
Dimitri Leontakianakis.
Exactly.
Can I ask, the points, were they, have they always been consistent, like in terms of how they calculated those points? Am I throwing up?
Back in those days, I think you got extra points for just how you could handle your booze and how rugged you looked.
Yeah, but also, you're saying there were Meniers, Juan Manuel, Sterling. Well, Sterling's not a Menier by the sounds of it. He's never won anything.
Never won a title.
Yeah, but if there were so many drivers, because Oaks were just popping out to have like a durry, why is Juan Manuel the?
Because he was the one that stayed. Obviously, he just took it seriously. He stayed in his car.
Oak, just the guy who finished. Yeah. That was the question. Like in these squads of drivers, is the Manier the guy who finishes?
Yeah, but this is another thing about this era that was so interesting. It was that the best drivers were the best drivers, right? Yeah. So they got the best cars.
Okay.
But so few cars kind of finished because of mechanical issues. So Stirling Moss, he finished a lot, okay? He won races, but he never won the title. And let's pop that picture up after that one there, and we'll see Alberto Ascari. So this dandy gent here, he was very superstitious, Alberto Ascari. He won 9 straight races from 52 to 53 in his Ferrari. So he was the 52 and 53 champ. But this soak, he, in 1955, he crashed at Monaco. And in those days, the hay bales were quite shitty, obviously.
Of course.
He ended up in the Monaco Harbour. When he had a crash. And then 4 days later, he went to Monza to go try out a Ferrari, and unfortunately he died. A friend of his had this Ferrari. He's like, I'd give it a spin. And he died. So Alberto Ascari, he was like the first high-profile casualty within the sport. And that sort of put a bit of a sorry end onto the first era of racing.
Rest in peace, Alberto.
Yeah, the second era, so 1958, okay, so we've already got our man Juan Manuel Fangio. So 1958 was the start of era 2. This is when the cars became mid-engined. And so you can move off that slide there, bud.
So because we're front-loading at this point in time, right?
Yeah, so okay. Heavy front-loading. So there's Juan Manuel Fangio. So in 1958, the Cuba Grand Prix... Cuba had a Grand Prix in 57, 58,
that
and 60.
That must have been one hell of a weekend.
That's a gangster weekend.
It was a big weekend.
Before the commies ruined Cuba. So in 58, what happened was, it's like Fangio is the guy. He's the Schumacher of the day. He gets kidnapped on the eve of the race by Fidel Castro's revolutionaries, pretty to disrupt the race. And they treated Fangio like an absolute king that he is. So they basically went up to him in a hotel, put a gun next to him, and said, "Look, we're kidnapping you." And he's like,
"Bigger than you."
He's like, "Let me finish my cigarette." Yeah. He was even sick, and they were like, "Cool." And then, yeah, so 58 was when the revolutionaries started to ruin Cuba, and they tried to ruin this race. But the big catastrophe actually of this race was that 6 spectators died when a driver sort of plowed into them. Yeah, there was a big, big drama here. Okay,
so is Fangio the middle guy?
Fangio's
the left guy.
Fangio's the middle oak there.
Yo.
Yes.
Yeah.
He sounded so much more swaggy.
He is terrible.
He looks
boy.
Like he works Very at a absolute, chop shop in Springs.
Absolute heartthrob. As you can see, there was no advanced hair studios back in those days.
He wouldn't be on a billboard at our Tambo.
Yeah. So unfortunately, the big thing was that like 6 spectators died, 31 were injured. Fangio basically was released, but didn't race in the race because as soon as the car went into the spectators, they stopped the race. And then Fangio decided that at that stage he was just going to retire. So he retired in 58, the greatest to ever do it. And then in this era, South Africa came in the mix. They were starting to get on the circuits, Mexico, and then it got into America.
Wait.
South Africa kind of was glazed in the, over that.
Yeah, dude. South Africa was in the mix.
Were you there in Kusheshes or what?
No, so what happened was is that in the late 50s,
it just pulled up in a Honda Ballard.
It started to re-travel. So back in this is another Cortina. Interesting thing about the different eras, right? You would get the official championship races, but then countries also had their own Formula One circuits. Okay. So there was actually a South African Formula One circuit where you would drive the same cars, but you would somewhat do it like in SA only. So there was a separate, like the Sunshine Tour, basically, if thinking golf terms.
There we go. Okay.
There was like their own like order of merit.
That's
and then,
cool.
Yeah.
That's tight.
Where do we do it? Like Swartkop?
All over, bro. All over in the cars. Rhodesia even had their own Formula One circuit. So they would be like in Bulawayo and Harare and they would go. Which then brings us to 1961. This is when they became mid-engined. So Emma, there's a beautiful image there of the shark nose car. In 61. You had it there for a second. Go back one. There we go.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look
I'm
how cool.
I'm mad at this. This is
It
tight.
Looks like a vape.
look how cool the cars became, guys. This is when they started to get really, really, really sporty.
I just can't get over
the wheels.
The wheels. I would be so scared.
This looks cool.
But that's starting to look really cool, right? So from here, the next oak that became a real maneer in the sport was a guy called Jim Clark. So Jim Clark won. He was a Scottish guy, so he won the Formula One in 63 and 65.
Yeah.
And until 1989, guys. So that's Jim Clark there.
Check the exposed piston.
So as you can see, there, the engine went behind the driver for the first time now, and he was like the best at that. So up until 1989, guys, the Soak still had the record for the most pole positions and the most fastest laps.
1989?
So from early 60s all the way through, the Soak's record stood. So another big rival of the Soak's at the time.
As the cars got better, he was still the guy. Fast.
Well, he was just so dominant in this era.
Shit.
So when it became mid-engined. So
it looks so dangerous, by the way.
One of the really great things about all the eras of Formula One were the rivalries. So here we got Jim Clark, and Jim Clark's main rival back in the day was a guy called Graham Hill. So Graham was a spicy-looking individual. I must have got a picture there of Graham. Look at him.
Come on! That is swaggy.
Team Graham, by the way. If we're going to Edward and Jacob this like Twilight, I'm Team Graham.
Graham Hill, what an absolute debonair, dashing gent. And the two of these oaks basically put Formula One on the map for being sexy.
Yeah. I'm watching if I'm this.
I mean, you thought Stirling Moss was a good looking oak. You thought Fangio was a bit of a heartthrob.
He looks like he smokes two cigarettes at once.
A huge fan of this oak. While pursuing all the ladies and bedding them. I mean, it was just a touch of class.
What manufacturer was he under?
So they all kind of drove Lotus. Lotus was the big car back in the day. That was the big car. So guys, that brought an end to like the mid-engined era, okay? So now we get into where the sport really gets quite special. We're talking late 60s here. This was like the start of the commercial era. Canada, Argentina, Japan, Brazil, they all came onto the circuit. So now we're getting big time. We're getting like a lot more races. So our guy, Jim Clark... We mentioned him now. So Jim Clark in 1968, he won the South African Grand Prix. So this is like still high times. So I think we got a picture there of 1968 with the South African Grand Prix. So there he's busting around Kyle Army in his Lotus. So this oak was, he was the Meneer, right?
Yeah.
Check the sign in the background there. Ford, Bedald. What's it?
Bardol, Repco, yeah. Shell.
So... This was the height of South Africa getting into Formula One. Okay, so now Jim Clark, first race of the season, New Year's Day, South African Grand Prix, massive draw, wins it. Then there's a 4-month break, not a wartime break. They just had a 4-month break. So what happened was that the guys would then go and drive whatever else basically had wheels. So Jim Clark, best there is, really, absolute best there is. He then goes and drives a Formula Two race in Germany and dies.
Are you given a 4-month break?
Take it easy, bro.
Being a teacher during the Christmas holidays and trying to find a school that's open. Like, what are you doing that for?
So, yeah, guys, unfortunately, that's how it happened for him. So he won in South Africa. That was his last Formula One race, and he died. So another interesting thing happened in 68, which changed the sport forever. In 1967, we spoke about every country having this own little Formula One circuit. So in Rhodesia, in the Rhodesian Grand Prix, Gunston was a local South African sport cigarette brand, right? So Anton Rupert's, obviously the start of the Rupert fortune was in cigarettes in this country and in East Africa. In the 1960s, basically, it was became known that cigarettes aren't so good for you. So there's a lot of bad press around the fact that cigarettes might actually kill you.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Seriously?
Yeah, no, they're actually quite bad for you. Cigarettes. Still. Yeah.
Better make some calls.
Yeah. So in 1967, wanting to get some PR, Anton Rupert and his team from the Rembrandt group, they approached a guy called John Love. I think we got a picture of the original orange car there. Okay, so this is John Love. Now, John Love was a privateer, and what he did was he basically funded his own thing, so he can do whatever he wants. Yeah. There was no branding or sponsorship right now in Formula One whatsoever. So in 67, he had the first Team Gunston car. He went on to win the race in Bulawayo that day. And then it was like, wow, this is really cool. Because now he went into the 1968 South African Grand Prix in his Gunston car as well. I think he only finished ninth or so. But this was the start, guys.
Of the branding era.
South Africans invented branding in Formula One.
That is a fun fact.
Fun fact. Really cool. That's how it started. 1968 was a watershed moment in the sport because basically, as the South Africans got into branding cars, so now the big cigarette era came into being. 1968, John Love on the racetrack there. Previously, Formula One had banned all outside sponsorships because it's like, it's not proper. It's not proper.
Yeah.
But in that same year, Shell had pulled out. BP had pulled out. Firestone weren't even giving these Oaks free tires. So Formula One needed to make money. So then obviously the cigarette companies saw this massive PR opportunity. They then came in with the cash, with the branded cars, which offset a major loophole there for the finances. And at the same time, guys, Bernie Eccleston got into the sport because he was the king of commercials. So 1968 was one of the biggest years. SA Grand Prix, the best driver gets killed in a motor accident, which is terrible. Formula One then becomes the cigarette cars.
It's the money now.
1970, Marlboro pull in.
Yeah, it's the
so money basically era. From 1984 to 2007 onwards, every single winning car had a cigarette brand on it. Yeah, it's just like and
now forever every changed. Taxi in Durban has a cigarette brand on it.
Using championship.
True yeah, domino
I've,
effect.
I've seen some unbelievable branding on Durban cars.
So true domino effect, because from there, obviously, now you got branding, now you got cars coming in.
Yeah.
Oaks started spending money on aerodynamics. Suddenly, the cars became a lot more sexy because they became faster.
This is when more Oaks started dying, surely.
No. Well, people die throughout. So then Embassy Hill Racing. Now, this is another cool story in the back of the cigarette era, right? Embassy was a British tobacco company. Graham Hill, obviously, the steam cat that we saw just now.
Yeah.
And let's just get a little reference again for... there we go. Yes. He's back in the game.
I wish he was my dad.
So this Graham Hill then started Embassy Hill Racing. So he was going to now take the sport even further. So he had... he was like a pilot as well. He was living the life before anyone was living the life.
Gone, James Bond.
1975, gone, guys. And then, next slide there, Amos. As you can see, there he is, Graham Hill. So he had his own team. This was like the Toto Wolff back in the day, really. And then things kind of went bad
except
from there.
Except Toto drove for his own team.
Yeah, but then in 1975, unfortunately, this happened.
No, don't say Graham ended up in an ashtray.
Next slide there, Amos.
Oh!
There is nothing left of whatever that was.
So, guys, unfortunately, Graham Hill then died in an airplane accident.
Oh, jeez.
You're joking, dude.
1975, just as everything was going up on the app, advertising, sponsorship, all coming into the sport, and then Graham Hill Embassy Racing kind of died with him. He had massive vision for the sport. He was going to do amazing things. But in 1975,
that's a wrap.
There was bad visibility in his private plane, and it hit the forest, and he died.
Yeah. Rip.
But guys, on the back of this, this is when the cars really did become iconic, though. Just pop the next slide there, Amos. I mean, how good does that car look?
That's where we start. That's the
hold
fire.
On.
Guys, the John Player Special black and gold livery was basically what made Formula One forever sexy.
I need to take a photo of that. Wait.
I mean, how good looking
that's
is that car?
That's the nicest looking car I think
what
I've ever seen.
So this is the era of the commercials and aerodynamics. So this is the end of... So going into the early 1980s,
the
so late 70s, early 80s, that's when these things started to really happen. So obviously Graham Hill dying was a terrible time. But in 76, something else happened that was pretty horrific. You guys remember the name Niki Lauda?
Yeah.
Okay. So Niki Lauda was driving at the Nürburgring. Next slide there, Amos. And this happened.
Caught fire.
A terrible, terrible series of events. People crash all the time. He was stuck in his car as it went ablaze. This was 1976. And as you can tell by the picture on the right there, it disfigures him rather terribly. Yeah.
To be fair, it does just look like a lot of the guys who are on the plane back from Istanbul.
It's a fair point, Dimitri. Yeah. It is a fair point.
I took that away from him.
Unfortunate before pick that
no,
never
he's
gets
the
an after.
He's the middle. Yeah.
Yeah, so then...
Sorry, Nikki.
So from here, though, another great rivalry starts. It's Niki Lauda versus James Hunt. One of the greatest rivalries in the sport, because Niki Lauda was the consummate professional, always tinkering with his car. James Hunt was the playboy. He was always just getting hammered. He was chasing skirts. He was doing everything, basically, which then led into the amazing movie Rush. Have you guys seen Rush?
Yeah. This is when I start knowing a tiny bit about F1, and that's thanks to Hollywood.
Yeah, Amos, pop the next slide there, as you can see. So the rivalry literally was the ugliest guy in the sport and the best-looking guy in the sport. You could not get any more beauty in the beastish, really. Now. It was really quite a thing. So these two were going at it hammer and tong. And 1976, obviously, was just an incredible year, because this is when the Chris Hemsworth character in the mix here, James Hunt, he won the title in 76. So you've got to see the movie Rush. You've absolutely got to see it.
And some of the manufacturers, which were they both Ferrari?
So they were McLaren back in the day.
Oh, okay.
The red Marlboro was McLaren. So I think we've got one more picture there of James Hunt. Amos on the next slide there. So he epitomized the hard drinking, hard smoking, hard womanizing era of Formula One.
George Best of
which
driving.
Many may say was actually the pinnacle of the sport, 1976.
She's famous.
Well, she's famous because she's sitting next to James Hunt.
No. She's a model and an actress. I'm quite sure of it.
Well, she's wearing gold, so I mean, it can only go up.
Is that
there.
Roxy Lowe?
I like how you landed that plate.
I mean, in many ways, guys, that was the pinnacle of the sport there, that picture right there. From there, it became a lot more professional, which then brought us into the turbo era.
I've got to get more professional.
I'm still in my turbo era.
So, guys, in the 80s, basically, 80s was synonymous with excess, right?
Yeah.
Harder, faster, everything must be better. So Australia got into the mix here. A little bit more expansion, some USA street races. So the major manufacturers were now having a major go within sport. Because we've got the cigarette branding and the advertising coming in.
The money's coming, right?
Money was coming in. Then the manufacturers were like, you know what? We can actually use this to sell our actual cars. So aerodynamics, all the innovations coming in heavily. Honda got in the mix at this stage. Renault was in the mix at this stage. And let's just have a look at one of the cars there. So on the next slide, you'll see one of what the cars looked like back in the day. So as you can see, there's a Renault.
I'm not mad at
that.
That
is absolute trash.
I'm not mad
good looking, huh?
It looks like a camera.
So guys, it's a good point that you make there. So we've just gone from the John Player Special, beautiful car. And this thing was just absolutely hideous. But it was the first time that these cars went to 1,000 horsepower. So all they wanted to do was make rockets.
Okay.
So you can see the look there. It's a very different looking car.
Yeah, I've never seen anything like that.
An ultimate rocket. So that was ultimate 80s power. And from here, Alan Prost came on the scene. Alan was just one of the absolute best. Amos, let's have a look at Alan Prost there. Sager on the arms, camel on the chest.
These guys were coining it.
That jacket is fire.
And a cap.
Oh, guys, I mean, this is such
Sager and camel. That's like my childhood.
Such an iconic era of Formula One right here. Hey? Another guy that came on the scene at the time was a guy called Nelson Piquet.
Nelson Piquet.
That's where Piquet comes from. Amos, next slide there. And Piquet comes from the fact that he actually gave it a Piquet.
That's amazing. So Nelson, I love Nelson.
Nelson Piquet was about to win a race. He was trying to lap a dude called Elsie Salazar.
He said, let's go.
And then Salazar basically crashed into him.
He said, if I can't win, nobody can.
So then Nelson gets out of his car and proceeds to give him a Piquet. And that is where the term giving a Oka Piquet comes from.
Yeah. Unbelievable. He was probably making fun of his Parmalat yogurt sponsorship, to be fair.
these guys were just throwing everybody on those jackets. Parmalat,
they probably called him full cream and he got touched. And then
but guys, how different was Formula One here? Yeah. Okay. You got the Oaks like hard drinking, hard smoking, womanizing. And then if something doesn't happen, guy gets out of the car and just gives him a
freak. You see, I think I would have watched this F1. Anyway.
I mean, can you imagine Lando Norris getting out of his car and slapping someone? It's like, so they had the full-on brawl. Afterwards, they obviously like had a bit of a kiss and makeup. Salazar just still to this day maintains, sorry, I couldn't do anything. You crashed into me.
Heat of the moment.
But like the big rivalry of this era was, of course, the Prost versus Senna rivalry. Prost was like the Frenchman. He was very meticulous. He was the first guy on the scene who did really well in this era. And then Senna was like the young, charismatic, handsome upstart. And once you got a picture of those two? So, Senna was a guy in the John Player special car, the black and gold one. And then Prost was the McLaren Oak. In the Oak in front there, he was just the head of the FIA. So it was a really exciting era with these two going at it, which then brings us into the next era, which was the safety and technology era, 1989 to 2004. So in many ways, this is where, for me, Formula One in its coolness died. Because, let's be honest, we all know what's coming up.
Yeah.
But first up, let's talk about the fact that Malaysia came into the mix here. So the Asian footprint started to spread in the sport in the late 80s. We spoke about the cars becoming absolute rockets. Now, the turbo was actually banned in this era because the cars were just going too fast.
Too many dudes are dying, surely.
The cars were just going too fast.
Also going out the game.
Yeah, I mean, we've gone from hay bales not so long ago. So now it's just going to be absolute warfare if we carry on. So the cars were replaced with normally aspirated 3.5-litre engines. More electronics came in for safety. And quite ironically, in the era of so much focus on safety, Ayrton Senna died. But not before one of the biggest steam cats comes onto the scene. And what's 1992 champion Nigel Mansell, please? Look at that man.
Look
at that man.
Breaking Bad.
In the McLaren.
I was a bit nervous about this show and like making...
Into the microphone there, Dimitri, please.
I was nervous about this show and it making me question my sexuality. And now I'm... Dude, look. Like the amount of pure meat you're throwing away is just ridiculous.
I mean, back when men were men.
Yeah.
Sean Connery's, sit down. Nigel Mansell's on the scene.
As much as we all think Magnum P.I. was cool and we all think that some oaks can rock a moustache...
This
no
guy's
one,
mustache is crazy.
No one came close to Nigel Mansell. I mean, he got an OBE just from his moustache and sheer manliness.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also, that McLaren of his, one of the most like iconic cars, the Renault that he drove there, he then went on to drive for McLaren. But that red, the white, blue, and yellow of the Renault was just with the Labatt's advertising and the Camel cigarettes.
We like this.
So, 1992, Mansell was our guy. And then the Senna-Prost rivalry just really carried on. It was a really beautiful thing within the sport, as I said, because now we've got more technical racing coming back with the cars being slightly less turbocharged. And let's pop the next slide there. And these two eventually then went on to team up as the Marlboro-McLaren duo.
I really want that Goodyear hat. I need you to know that.
The drip here has been immaculate. That's just, what
guys,
I can't even,
just that's what we're talking about errors, and we'll get to Abu Dhabi. But and this is true sports-wide. Sports is not as stylish as it used to be.
That gear is so dope. Bro.
Guys, this is pretty much it. So that's what, for me, this was the last cool era of, because like the drip was incredible, as it really was, especially with the McLaren Oaks, with the Marlboro advertising. So then, obviously, what happened in 1994, Ayrton Senna, next slide there, please, Amos. Ayrton Senna, unfortunately, in his McLaren, looking as dapper as he did, with his Hugo Boss seatbelt on.
My gosh.
Unfortunately, he does die in 94, which then changes the sport forever. We were now already in the safety era of trying to make things a little bit better.
Over-regulated now.
And now the regulations come in.
This guy was such an icon. I mean, like, movies. One of my best friend's kids is called Senna. I went to school. I was born in 1994. Two of my classmates are called Ayrton.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Like, people grew up with this guy. It was like, I mean, I grew up in a non-F1 household. Yeah. But for those that did, Senna dying in 94 was, like, as bad as it could get.
It was one of the saddest moments within sport. Because I think, you know, you both touched on it quite easily there. It was just the most iconic era for everything within the sport.
And he was the poster boy.
He was the poster boy of it. And then quite like, it's funny how these things are quite perpetual in progress. Okay, so Senna dying was a major thing. The McLaren Marlboro iconic car was quite a thing. But in the same year, out of the ashes came Michael Schumacher in 1994.
So baton has always passed in F1.
So that era was quickly then took up by Michael Schumacher. So 1994.
Sorry.
I mean,
One more nudge. Give us more nudge.
So basically, I mean, can a man get any more handsome than Nigel Mansell?
Goodness me.
The great thing about this photo, thanks, Amos. The great thing about this photo is that he's now the ultimate Marlboro man, taking over from Senna. But look at those eyebrows.
Yep. No, they are the same width and thickness as his moustache.
Everything's just
he has three moustaches. at different parts of his face. And I'm in love with this man.
Guys, you know, the thing about beauty is that symmetry plays a massive part to it. Nigel Mansell has the sexiest eyebrows ever.
The stash is perfect.
This guy's Formula Zero, dude.
It's Formula Nige at this stage, really, for
Formula
me.
Formula Nige, I mean,
take
dude.
Nothing away from Schumacher, which we'll get into now.
Imagine being attractive with the name Nigel.
Nige.
You know what I mean? Goodness. Sorry, Oaks. We digress.
We have to try to get back to Michael Schumacher. But Nigel Mansell, what an era, huh? So, yeah, Emerson, pop the next slide there. We'll see Michael Schumacher.
Give it Nige.
Basically,
Michael Schumacher, no moustache. Major downer there. I mean, a fresh-faced German came onto the scene and forever changed the sport.
And took over.
And his car looks like one of those play city, city man. You know those... With those, when you're a kid, the rugs that are of a city and you run your car around them.
But
that
also, this is a terrible looking car.
It's a bad looking car. That's what I'm saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, Nigel
United
Schumacher,
Colors of Benetton is the sponsor. It's quite cool.
It wasn't a great car, but he somehow managed to get a tune out of it. In 1994, he won his first championship.
Fresh the whole faced. Thing.
And so we moved away from moustaches and sheer rugged manliness, and we now had actual drivers.
Yeah.
Guys who were doing really clinical,
this
amazing
is when
things.
The metrosexual Germans came in.
From a metrosexual German to a metrosexual Finn, the big...
Kimmy.
Big... No, no, not yet. Easy. Mika Häkkinen ran so that Kimmy could walk.
Okay.
Mika Häkkinen was the next big rivalry with Michael Schumacher. So this oak in the late 90s, also carrying on McLaren's legacy with the Marlboro sponsorship. Mika Häkkinen won two Grand Prix championships, but he was most known for being the Flying Finn. Mm. Pop the next slide there. So he was Schumacher's big rival back at the stage, right? Steamy picture here. And
that
again,
I must
point out, neither of them have moustaches, so they're still not real men, in my opinion.
Yeah, these guys, can the show end?
But, I mean, I told you, it kind of peaks now.
Sorry.
But from here, I told you, he got the nickname the Flying Finn because in 1993, this happened. So, in 1993, Mika Häkkinen, the brakes failed on his car, and he literally caught the curb and went flying up. Now, this is a real unfortunate thing for him, but not for this picture, which then became one of the greatest pictures in the sport itself.
Yeah.
And, basically, if you were... It all fast, and you were from Finland. They called you the Flying Finn.
It's a cool nickname.
But Mika was the real Flying Finn because he just fucking vaulted this curb and you're going.
Air.
In 1995, in Australia, he actually had a terrible accident. He had a puncture at high speed, fractured his skull. But he went on to keep racing. So Mika Häkkinen, Australia didn't go too well. But the Oak was actually, he was a real legend, eh? A real legend of the sport. And that rivalry really defined that era after losing Ayrton Senna. Which then gets us into era 6, which was the manufacturer boom era. And this is where Formula 1 really just became massive, right? Bahrain, China, Singapore, Abu Dhabi, Korea, India, all of these were added to the circuit. So now we've got lots of races. BMW's now in the mix. Mercedes have got cars there. Toyota's very much in. And then the youngest ever champion.
Fernando Alonso.
Yeah, Fernando Alonso, that was the guy. Very young image of him on screen right now. Fernando Alonso, kind of post the era of really rugged men with moustaches, he took it even further by being the youngest guy. Yeah. And the great thing about Fernando Alonso is that because he was only 24, he was the right age to obviously then try and contest Schumacher's dominance. But this is where it gets really steamy in the pictures. And there's a picture of when Lewis Hamilton made his debut. So now this is 2007. Look at that.
Jeez.
So now these oaks are... Okay, so now we've got Alonso, who's the young gun. But now the even younger oak coming in here with Lewis Hamilton, fresh-faced. Again, no moustaches. So the McLaren-Mercedes team was these two young steam cats in 2007. And that was like a really great time for the cars really kicking on the professional era. And then Mercedes basically in 2013 came into it. And that's where it really became quite a sport. Yeah. But from 2010 to 2013, Amos, pop the next slide there. A young Sebastian Vettel came into the mix. So now we've got all these young drivers. We've gone from a stage of like the sport being quite hard, quite rugged. And now we've got all these young oaks, but like look super, super young. And then the Vettel-Alonso rivalry basically was the next best thing while Lewis was finding his feet. And we were going to be this. Yeah.
Shout out to Vettel on that, man. He really, really pushed Red Bull in the right direction, man.
Yeah, he was really great. And at that stage, Alonso was like Ferrari man. Yeah, so now the sport, more like the sport that we know today, starts taking shape in this era, which then brings us to the hybrid era. Okay, so the hybrid era was 2014 to 2021, and it basically was only one car, the Mercedes.
Yeah.
They won 8 straight, guys.
Yeah, no, they pulled a Man City.
They pulled an absolute Man City. They had the money. They had the technology. They got Lewis in the mix. And they basically just took those V6 hybrid engines with all the complex recovery systems, and they absolutely dominated. Get a picture there of young Lewis there, Amos. So young Lewis with his Tommy Hilfiger branding, the piercings. He was like, that was it. The sport was now.
Yeah, he was like the top marketability in terms of an athlete post Schumacher. Oh,
yeah, because
it was crazy.
Schumacher was the best Formula One driver, but Lewis was the first Formula One superstar.
Yeah.
I think that's the only way we can describe it, right?
I think the global presence of Lewis Hamilton during this era is crazy. I think he takes Formula One to another level.
He absolutely did. And that, so from 2014, again, the sport took a massive leap forward. And the Mercedes team, being so dominant at the time, they also had Nico Rosberg driving for them. Mm-hmm. And so we got a picture of the two of them there. Now, the thing is, Lewis was the best, right? And Rosberg was like his second. And then Rosberg somehow won the title of Lewis in the 1 year. And it was like, okay, I like you, but now you're beating me. I don't like you anymore.
I'm the guy now.
It was a very unlikely sort of rivalry, because now we're in the era of the subtle stubble beard.
Yeah, no, thank goodness. Sheesh.
It's like Rosberg, it used to be guys like Nigel who were brand ambassadors for Camel and probably like, and then Rosberg's like, Heineken Zero.
Yep.
And moisturizers.
And stubbly beards.
So, Hugo Boss leisure wear.
Yeah. Like if they had to somehow have a time machine that put them in the same era, I think Mansell's winning that 9 times out of 10, eh?
Yeah. Dude, I don't know if it's a nostalgia type of vibe, but these jackets suck compared to the early era. I don't know what they were doing.
And it's like 31 sponsors on a boring jacket.
Yes.
It's just the sport got less and less stylish.
Yeah.
And this was when I was sort of growing up, right? So I was born in 1994. So I guess my exposure to F1 was probably in its cheesiest era, which is maybe why I'm not a massive fan. I'm more of a fan after today, to be fair, because now origin stories are always great and romantic.
Yeah, well, guys, Formula One goes downhill from there, because now we're at the stage where Max Verstappen gets in the mix, right? He becomes the youngest ever winner at 18 years, 228 days. So Kimi Antonelli, sure. He won his first race at 19. Max was 18 when he won his first race.
18?
Here's another pick of Max when he passed his driver's license.
Jeez, Max looks so young now, bro.
He passed his driver's license wearing a Red Bull hat.
That is ridiculous, bro.
But yeah, so Hamilton obviously was everything in the sport. And at this stage, Max coming into prominence, 2021 was like a real defining part of this era. And it wrapped it up nicely in that Lewis was about to get his 8th title. This was going to be it, guys. The greatest of all time. And he led the final race from start to finish. There was skullduggery with a safety car. And then Max essentially won in 2021.
I watched this race. I remember watching
this. It was a huge turning point in the sport.
Yeah, I think this is when people really got into it. The next generation of like F1 fans got into it, because I'm Dimitri, like you, I wasn't a huge Formula One fan until this season of Drive to Survive came out, and this specific race. And that rivalry is something that probably will never get like this close ever again.
But it was so glad you put it up, because Drive to Survive came on in this era of Formula One
and
racing.
And Netflix saved the sport.
Yeah.
And Netflix had to get into the sport because, as you guys said, Rosberg, Hamilton, it wasn't a great era.
Who cares?
It was going down a bit as far as interest was concerned. So this race, this finish, this new changing of the guard kind of thing, sadly at the expense of Lewis, let's be honest, because when he dominated the sport, he was great. He just didn't have enough good rivals.
Yeah.
Max had to come along in this era to then shake up sport. Yeah. So Lewis was always be defined by the hybrid era. Mercedes made the sport boring. But it's not their fault that they were just incredible.
It's
the aim of every manufacturer.
I've just clicked on something as to why maybe I also haven't loved this sport for a long time. Drive to Survive helped for a bit, but even my interest after that petered out. Is that F1, for the most part, and you can help me if I'm lying, is not a sport where the underdog can win. There's no such thing as Leicester winning the 2016 Premier League. Yeah. You know, it's not like next year we're going to wake up and Yuki Tsunoda is going to do this. Or Pierre Gasly is going to come out of nowhere unless he drives for the right manufacturer. Yeah. So I think the romance of that sport is that if you can have a stretch of dominance like 8 years, like Hamilton did, or 9 years like Francesco or whatever it did. And
Fangio.
And Schumacher. If the same winner is winning all the time, the drama and the romance of the sport for me is tough. It's tough.
It's a good thing here. Sorry, on that. So the only underdog in all the areas here was Michael Schumacher and the United Colors of Benetton Renault.
Yeah, and that blue one.
Which is so ugly.
But then straight away to the better manufacturer and then wins forever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So like that is kind of Man City-esque in the way, but like there was still, Man City could still go to Sheffield Wednesday and lose.
Yeah, and you think,
you know, like that could still happen. But in this sport, that's what I struggled to connect with.
Yeah.
And maybe I would have connected more if I started watching in the more stylish era because stuff was cool. Imagine Drive to Survive with Ayrton and Nigel and those homies.
Imagine Nigel Mansell and Drive to Survive.
Yeah, come on, dude. Like, I'm all over that. But that's why I've struggled in this game.
And I agree with you. For a sport that's so standardized and formularized, it's wild that it's never tightened in terms of like ranking. Mm. It's always the same repeat brands.
Just get a bit close to the mic there, bud.
No,
it's just...
Oh, me. My bad. Yeah, so it's just weird. And we just moved in together at the same time.
It's just weird that you are far from your microphone. guys, so from there, Max obviously was the new thing. You're the changing of the guard. And then basically the next era we've got is when the sport had like a cost cap, as in like, okay, well, these oaks were a little bit too good. Let's get the money on more of a level playing field. And
financial
then
fair play in F1.
So this is where the sport becomes very finicky in my mind. We've gone through the sexy eras, the iconic eras. Now it's all about spreadsheets, margins, and all these kind of things.
It's data.
Yeah. Along with that, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Miami, Vegas, they could all get added. So now there's 24 races in a season from 2022. It's a really big deal. We've now got sprint races. So now from 2022 onwards, we are essentially in the modern behemoth of what Formula One is.
Yeah.
And as much as I love it, as much as I do enjoy Formula One, I think it's great for banter. It brings us so many different talking points. The sport, the main reason I want to do the show is that I don't think the sport has changed so much in its identity, in its appeal, in the kinds of people we see watching it, participating in it. Like we all know, everything's got more professional over the years and more clinical. But Formula One is just such an amazing example of how it's almost become clinical to death.
Mm.
But it has to be because we're talking about cars. Max dominates this era. Lewis, unfortunately, wanes terribly. But in this era, we also then get to see, for the benefit of all the housewives out there, Charles Leclerc. He comes on the scene. We've got a nice fresh-faced Charles there.
I thought you were going to show it. No, what's his face? Toto.
So, guys, I mean, I think this is almost where we've got to end the show because we've had Nigel Mansell, and now we have that.
Yo, it's gone down.
In our lifetimes, guys, we've gone from Nigel Mansell to Charles Leclerc.
Formula One is starting to feel like a metaphor for life. You know, I think Charles versus Nigel is how a lot of things have changed in the world.
Dimitri, it's a wonderful point that you make there, actually. I think Formula One, because I used to love watching James Bond movies because it showed you how civilization changed, as in like places you travel to, the fashions, the cars, how you went from beating women to not beating women, the drinks that you would have. It was a big snapshot of a big like thing. Formula One's exactly... Formula One shows us what life used to be like in the 1950s through the rugged
80s. It's a really great lens into culture of the time.
It really is.
And with it, all banter aside, it really, really is. Like the things that mattered are stuck on a car. The things that, you know, the things that are important. And it's telecom companies now, and it was cigarettes.
All the brands that have come and gone and all that journey.
From grit and grime and panache and swag to data.
To data and manufacturers basically getting all the big cash into it.
It's an AI sport.
It is. It really is. Amos, pop a picture there of Lando Norris to complete the trifecta of fresh faces.
Young'uk.
Honest to God, I would love to scrap with this guy so badly, dude. Like,
you dropped me this one.
So, I hate to keep going about Nigel Mansell, but again, who wouldn't? But like, guys, it really is. This is how the full circle moment, because Landon was the face of the sim racer. So he was the guy who was like doing the sims early on. I mean, Nigel was probably making women pregnant at the age of 14. Ishak was in his room all day on the sims. And that's the new breed of driver that came through in this cost cap era.
Yeah, and the popularity of the sports really grew in the younger group, because you can see when people are starting to fall into loving racing.
No matter what, you cannot convince me that this person is likable. You know what I mean? Like imagine being a fan of Lando Norris.
You're like,
imagine a poster in your room of Lando Norris.
You would need to be a young boy. And that's the thing, Dimitri, we are not young boys.
Yeah.
So Nigel resonates with us, because men.
Yeah.
I want my drivers to sound like this.
Yes, exactly. I want my F1 driver to be able to give an Oka PK. Nelson PK.
I mean, literally the guy, PK. It's, you know, we've lost.
In closing, I love Formula One. I really do. I look forward to the races. Yeah. But to know where it's come from,
crazy,
makes me think that Amos, enough with Lando Norris.
That's perfect. To know where it's come from.
Amos, if you really want to impress us, get Nigel back on the screen, but don't show us Lando again. So yeah, guys, that's in a whirlwind snapshot, that is the sport of Formula One. I think it's just one of the coolest sports when you really get back into the weeds of it, how it's changed, how South Africa basically invented advertising on the cars in 68. Love
that. That is crazy.
That is very cool. I'll try again. Right, I will try again, because I love sports.
Yeah.
You know that about me. I love them all. I watch them all. And the one spot where I'm sitting in the pub or where I feel left out is when guys talk about F1. But I'm glad I've also got to explain my point of view a little bit as to why, the space for not the underdog and the over-commoditization and marketability of it has almost diluted something quite beautiful. Yeah. But I'll try again.
I think this is the season, because it's super competitive in my eyes, that with all the major changes, once again, which could be good and bad, is that people are trying to figure it out. And in that figure it out era, you're going to see a lot of people coming through the ranks. Kimi Antonelli now stepping up, Lewis poling, that we didn't expect.
Lewis on podium again. Hey? Yeah, I'd love to see it.
And this is where I think it's the most competitive. It'll be because of the major changes that have happened.
I'll give it another go.
Well, that's the thing, guys. We are now in a new era. Currently being halted by war. But we're in an era now where, hopefully all that kind of stuff happens. We've learned so much. They try to standardize things. There's more manufacturers that are doing great things. There's more drivers that are really competitive. So this new era is never going to be as cool as the 80s or 90s.
Yeah.
It's never going to be as cool as the cigarette advertising.
And guys knocking beers off the races straight off.
We're never going to see another James Hunt, Nigel Mansell, Ayrton Senna, Alan Prost, or Nelson Piquet. Unless you're watching the sort of lower tiers.
I'm going to hitting guys and calling it a Nelson.
Just get Nelson. Yeah, guys, that's Formula One. Japan Grand Prix is the next one, and then all of April will be at break. But this week, just to wrap up the show, of course, we said last week we were going to give away two tickets for Thursday, day number one of Live Golf SA. And let's have a look at what's happening on the YouTube there, on that slide. YouTube has basically put the comments together to see who can win this thing. Top of the pile there will be Colin. So Colin Galpin, we'll be giving you the tickets. Well done. Thanks to everyone else who was.
See you there, bro.
Thanks for everyone else who entered in that one. Yeah, guys, Live Golf is going to be there this week. I'm damn excited about that. Shaz, our next show is going to be about Champions League again.
Yay. Yay, yay. English clubs being clubbed everywhere, PK'd.
Liverpool are still in the Champions League, even though they're getting Nelson PK'd in the actual league. Man United are looking resurgent in the league because they can play in the Champions League next year. But yeah, we'll get into the preview for the big quarterfinals, into the semis, and that'll be the next show you have with us. And yeah, Dimitri, I'm so glad that we got to talk about Nigel Mansell.
I knew when you asked me, I didn't even hesitate. I said, listen, Bri, I don't know how much I'll be able to bring to the table.
Yeah.
But I knew that it was going to, we would end up having some wonderful chats, as the three of us always do. I now have a new wallpaper on my phone. I will Nigel Goals Mansell. Spending time with you two fellas on the couch is always a pleasure. So thank you.
Always great.
Always great.
Thanks very much for joining us. Catch you back with some football on our next show.